I get one call from my jail cell, can I call you guys?
We promise we'll do a GoFundMe account for your bail.
Yes.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, we talk to our own interviewer, Peggy Knudsen, and we'll talk to Iowan Justin Scott about pinning politicians down on where they stand on the separation of church and state. I would like to formally welcome to our show Peggy Knudsen. Peggy has actually been interviewing with us for a few months, but we haven't actually properly introduced her to everybody. So we're going to take the time to do that today. Welcome, Peggy.
Thank you so much. I am so glad to be here, and I'm glad to be a part of this. It's very exciting.
For everybody who's been listening to you for a while now, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us how you ended up an atheist.
I was brought up Methodist, but my parents didn't really let us choose our own route. We pretty much had to go to church unless you were sick or dying. And
one or the other.
It's right. There was no excuses in my mom's book. And we pretty much lived there on Sundays. We had youth group and we had keys to the church. We were there on Wednesday nights. And that was my upbringing. When I met who was to be my husband, I converted to Catholicism. And I say this to myself, I compromised, but in compromising, I compromised my own principles to convert. So I did that under a bit of duress from family members. And really, I have to say, I kind of regretted it at the time, didn't feel good about it. But now, looking back, what I know now, it probably was sort of a catalyst for my movement towards atheism and free thought. And I don't mind donning labels. I have all kinds of labels. One is atheist, one is humanist, I'm a parent, I'm a child, I'm a spouse, and a sibling, and a free thinker. So I have no problem, and I'm pretty much out and proud, so to speak. So I came to atheism just through, I was sort of noticing after my children were born. I have three children, and we shopped around at a lot of churches because tried Catholicism for a while, and I just really couldn't do it anymore. After my first two were baptized, my third one, we had moved on to an Episcopal church, which is Catholicism light. And then briefly, we tried a non-denominational Christian church. But oddly, I at one point asked the pastor, what are the teachings here about gays and homosexuals? What are the teachings at this church? Because my brother is gay. And the only answer I continued to get was, we're a Bible-believing church. So we teach what the Bible says. And it was the same.
No dog whistles there.
Well, that was pretty much the last time I went there. I had asked them about their teachings on women as well. And it was basically the same thing. We are a Bible-believing church. And, you know, it was one of those kind of rock churches, you know, where they have a band and they use pop culture in all their references to get people in the door. And asking friends, asking acquaintances, where do you go to church and what do they teach about gays and lesbians and women in particular, I found a lot of people had no idea. They had no clue what their church said about it. They just said, oh, you need to ask the pastor. But this kind of began my questioning. And I remember looking up on the internet one day, and it's probably been, over a decade ago. 12 years ago or so, I looked up, can you be a Christian and not follow the teachings of Jesus? And boy, that one Google search changed my life. It was an explosion on the internet, which if I didn't have the internet, I don't know how this could have happened. It was about the errancy of the Bible, not inerrancy, but the errancy of the Bible that I began to read. And I began to read posts on xchristian.net, and it took a little while. It was a bit like a snowball, but once that snowball started rolling, there was no stopping it.
So that gets you to not believing. How did you end up involved in atheist activism?
Well, I helped to found a chapter of Americans United for Separation of Church and State here in Wichita, Kansas, and was the vice president on that board for many years. I'm now ex officio board member. But I really felt like I needed to have a voice in what is going on. So I do consider myself an activist. It was difficult at first. It kind of created some waves in my family to be out. But the more you're out and the more you talk about it, the less startling it is for people once they know. But I will say it has been a long, difficult struggle. I have had a very close friend say I was the tool of Satan, and she's no longer a friend of mine because she just could not handle that. And I've had family members say, your opinions are not welcome. We do not want you talking or even stating your opinions. I've been told I can't talk to adult nieces and nephews about my beliefs. And I've also been told that my children shouldn't talk to their cousins about their beliefs. When being asked to not express my opinions, it's always when I've expressed them in response to someone else's, what they were talking about.
Of course.
The same is true with politics. I'm pretty much have been told I'm not allowed to espouse my own political ideas. I am very political. I follow politics. It's a passion of mine.
Well, and I think that's a great thing for the podcast to have. We will take all of that pent-up talking about politics that you don't get to do anywhere else and turn
that's
it into shows like this one.
Yes,
so that's
a great
perfect
show today. And our guest talks about that quite a bit. And another one of my absolute loves is pop culture. I am a pop culture addict.
Nice.
I love TV. I love movies. I love sci-fi. I love comics. I just love it all. And I am excited. And I hope that we can have a little bit of that on the podcast as well.
Oh, I have plans. I have plans. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about you?
I'm a jack of all trades and a master of none. I've done a little bit of everything. I have a background in behavioral science, but I worked for a nonprofit for several years in Kansas City, and I have been a substitute teacher. I have had an interior decorating business, and now I'm working on a podcast.
That's wonderful, and we are very glad to have you on board. Today on the Humanist Hour, we have got a treat. We are introducing activist Justin Scott, who has been very active in Iowa. He helped the Secular Coalition for America launch the Secular Coalition for Iowa in an effort to create a presence for non-believers in politics there. He's been talking to candidates, getting their responses, and it's been a very interesting ride. Justin, welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm looking forward to summer, I'll tell you that much. This Iowa winter is getting very old.
Well, and you have been out and about in it quite a bit.
Yes, I have. I've had to bundle up in places I didn't think I'd have to, and it's all been worth it, though. It's been very fun.
Well, so Justin, you've been attending a lot of town hall meetings, talks with some of the candidates, and the Iowa caucuses are now over. Are you still doing that?
You know, I'm actually going to try to bring that back to a local level. When I got started in this, I had never done it before. You know, I've always been kind of a political junkie, so I've always enjoyed things like this. But now that I'm kind of an outspoken atheist slash humanist slash secularist, I'm very motivated to get out in front of these candidates. And now I want to get out in front of elected officials and kind of do the same thing around here in Iowa.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about your background.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about how you were raised and how you came to this position that you're adhering to right now.
My favorite story to start off with is that I've been told that I was baptized twice. There were some disagreements between the Catholic Church and my dad not being a Catholic. So when I was first born, I guess I was baptized Catholic. But then when my sister was born, they re-baptized us Lutheran. During an interview recently, one of the interviewers took a shot or laughed about it and said, well, man, I guess that holy water wasn't holy enough if you're out doing this now 30-some years later. So grew up in kind of a cafeteria Christian-style upbringing. You know, we didn't go every Wednesday and then every Saturday. But, you know, we were there every Sunday. Dad made us go to the 8 a.m. service, and then we had to go to Sunday school. And, you know, I didn't fear God. I just knew that that's what you did because you're from Iowa and that's what everybody else does. And so, you know, I wasn't one of these kids that had to carry a Bible around. I mean, most of the time I couldn't find the darn thing anyway. So, but it was funny. Freedom From Religion Foundation did an interview type, you know, get to know a member on me about 2 years ago. And they said, what was the first moment that you knew that you really didn't believe? And it's funny, the thought that came back to me was when I was a teenager, when we would go to Sunday school, we were more interested in reenacting the previous night Saturday Night Live skit. And we couldn't have cared less about what we were being taught. And I mean, whether that's being a teenager or whether that was my first moment of atheism, it's hard to tell, but I'm going to say it was my first moment. You know, I grew up in the church, and then I got confirmed when I was 16, and I think I was basically going through the motions to please my parents. My dad has always been a little bit more religious than my mom. My parents are divorced, so it's kind of neat growing up in two different households and seeing how religion played a role in their life. But it wasn't until I actually got to college that I stumbled upon a conversation online. I think it was in a message board, and the thread was titled, you know, God isn't real, or, you know, it's okay to not believe in God. And I kind of had to, like, look over my shoulder, like, okay, if I click this, is anybody going to watch me do this? You know, is anybody going to see me do this, and what's going to happen?
Welcome back to the Humanist Hour. This week, Jen and Peggy are talking with Justin Scott. In a piece on Pathos, you also mentioned inspiration from Madeline Murray O'Hare. Can you speak a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was given the advice of getting away from the church. In order to discover what your belief systems are, you need to get away from the people that are going to be cheerleaders for a certain belief system. And it said, you know, just grab whatever Bible you want and just read it. Well, I tried it and I couldn't do it. I got maybe a paragraph in and I just went, what the hell is this? Like, this is not what I remember from growing up. So, you know, you jump online, and I know there's a lot of garbage out there, but I really started off with groups like, you know, American Humanists, American Atheists, and Freedom From Religion. And I started looking at YouTube debates and YouTube channels, and the story of her really fascinated me because I want to say she really lit the activist fire under me, because for what she did at her time, it's one thing for me to go and stand up in 2016 and say, hey, I'm an atheist. I mean, we're one of the fastest growing groups, not just atheists, but nuns, you know, people that are religiously unaffiliated. But when you look at what she did back in her time, and to challenge, you know, something that ended up going to the Supreme Court, that's huge. And I just kind of look at her as an inspiration for all those moments where I would walk into a town hall and say, okay, you're going to be the only atheist in this crowd of like 150 people. Like, hold on tight, you know, and believers back in the day would wear what would Jesus do wristbands. I kind of think we should make some that say, what would Madeline do? And I just want to put it out there that our third child is named Madeline. Coincidence? I think not.
Cool.
She actually did receive a lot of backlash. How do you think that's changed? Have you seen any backlash about what you are doing and a newly outed atheist? Have you had any repercussions?
Well, surprisingly, not during the presidential, not during the Iowa caucus, I haven't. I didn't receive anything more than dirty looks during the events. I don't even want to say dirty. I just want to say, you know, confused, like, who the hell is this guy? Where did he come from? Who let him in? You know, that type of thing. And it's evident in all the videos. You can see the expressions on their faces. But before I started doing this, I was living in my hometown, which is about 5,000 people. It's about 80 to 90% Christian. And I had created a group, kind of a meetup for people that are on the fence about religion or that are just full-blown atheists. And our local newspaper did a feature on it. And I'll say that that was the moment that I really started to get pushback. One of the things I received was a letter written from a gentleman inviting me to his church and saying that I needed to come find Christ. And then we actually relocated to Waterloo, where I'm at now. And out of nowhere, we got this anonymous Christmas card that said, may the Spirit of Christ find you this Christmas season.
And oh, my. That card certainly found you.
Oh, yeah. And inside it was handwritten, God bless. But it had no return address. It had no signature on it. Whatever. It wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it still told me that what I'm doing is being seen by people. I'm actually motivated by that. Mm-hmm. Because if in my small way I can help normalize being an atheist or being a humanist or being a skeptic or a freethinker or agnostic or just, you know, a non-theistic American, then I feel like I've done my part in a little way.
And how is your family with this? Are they all on board?
You're probably the first interview that I've done that's really asked that question, and I don't have a problem sharing. I have a lot of support. There are a few that have kind of raised their eyebrows about it, but I've kind of just told them or reminded them that live and let live, and I don't go after them for what they believe, and I sure don't expect them to go after me for what I don't believe. I would say probably 95% of my family believe, whether that's in Christianity or some higher power, but I always tell them, listen, I'm not worried about what you believe. It's only when you try to push it on me or my family, that's when we have an issue. So for the most part, it's been very smooth. My mom's been very supportive. I've really given her a lot of credit. She believes. You know, her father died a couple years ago, and she posts on Facebook about how he's in heaven, and I don't feel like it's my place to go after that. All in all, I'm very fortunate. My wife is super supportive. She's kind of the one that kicked me in the butt and said, get out and do this, because if you don't, who else will?
Mm-hmm. You need to put that on the t-shirt, Justin.
I know.
If you don't, who else will?
Exactly.
Now, Justin, for our listeners who aren't quite familiar with what you've been doing recently, can you tell us a little more about the process of what you've been doing?
You know, Iowa has a very unique opportunity, and all Iowans have a unique opportunity to get in front of the candidates every 4 years. There's this pressure on the candidates to go into coffee shops and do little town halls and, you know, really allow voters the opportunity to shake hands with them and ask them very tough questions that the general media may not do when they do their interviews. And a lot of times the campaigns control the questions that the general media give them. So I wanted to take it upon myself to go out and ask questions from our standpoint, ask questions about their faith, but not just, are you Catholic or are you Lutheran, but more, do you believe and how does that influence your decisions and how will that affect your decision making as president? Do you plan to uphold or strengthen the separation of church and state? You know, like with Ted Cruz and Ben Carson, one of the things I asked them specifically was, I think more so Ben Carson, was, are you an American first or a Christian first? Because I think Ted Cruz at some point had made the comment about that. So in a nutshell, I wanted to take advantage of my unique opportunity of getting in front of these candidates to really do something for our movement. At the end of the day, we've got a huge opportunity as non-theistic Americans to get out, be heard, get these candidates and these elected officials to realize how large of a voter block we really are. Hopefully that answers some of the questions. And I'm all about sharing this story with whoever wants to know it. So maybe I'll, at some point, give my contact info. And if people want to email me and just chat about it, or even they want to Skype with me, I would love it. You know, I haven't seen too much of what I did out in New Hampshire or South Carolina or Nevada. And that's actually kind of, I guess, disappointing, because I was kind of hoping that this would have led to something bigger nationwide. But I'm very optimistic about it. I still think that there's opportunity out there. So
you got to get those t-shirts out there.
Speaking of t-shirts, if I can share just kind of a funny story. When I first started doing this, I was just going out in my regular street clothes. I really didn't have anything that identified me as an atheist. And if I can, I'd like to really thank David Silverman and Nick Fish out of American Atheist, because as soon as they heard about what I was doing, they are putting on the American Atheist Voter Initiative. And that was amazing, to be able to walk into an event, whether it's their shirt or your guys' shirt or Freedom From Religion shirt, doesn't matter. It matters that we identify ourselves as non-theistic Americans. So once I got that shirt on, I got known as the guy in the atheist t-shirt, which was actually very powerful, because then it wasn't just, well, he's just some dude, but it was like, no, there he is, he's over there. So if there's any way that the voters that are listening to this can go out, even if it's just with a Sharpie marker and a t-shirt, and write atheist voter, or I'm an atheist, or this is what an atheist looks like, you know, that just only helps our cause, so.
Mm-hmm. So we can call this the Justin Scott effect. If we have people going to these town hall meetings.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when I first went out to my first event, I never thought that this would turn into anything like this. The first event I went to was Rick Santorum at a pizza shop. I really had no idea that it would explode the way it did. When I got home, I emailed a couple of atheist bloggers, and I just said, hey, I did this thing, do you think it's cool? And one of them that responded was Hemant Mehta at The Friendly Atheist, and he was like, this is amazing, do you have video, can you get it to me? And I went, you really think this is good stuff? And then that really motivated me to go to the next one, and then the next one, and then before you know it, I really saw the impact that it was having. When I had the exchange with Marco Rubio, for those of you that don't know, that thing's been seen almost 15 million times. I mean, it's just exploded, because I asked him, are you running for commander-in-chief or pastor-in-chief? And it was at that moment that I went, yeah, this is huge, because when the Washington Post and USA Today and the Associated Press, Time Magazine start to cover you, I think you've done something, either right or, you know, you've done something to get their attention.
Now, Justin, I have a question on the Marco Rubio issue. Do you feel like that actually might have bolstered his evangelical base and actually want to then have him as pastor-in-chief and break down that wall of separation between church and state? It seems like there was such a backlash on their side. Maybe not a backlash, but they said he won that conversation.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, if you look at any of the media coverage, I quote-unquote confronted him, which is so not what happened. I was literally like sitting in the back row. They said, does anybody have any questions? I raised my hand. They said, yeah, sir, here you go. Here's the microphone. And very calmly and respectfully, I asked him my question. You know, it's funny, going back to your question, Hemant Mehta, again, gave me a hard time about that. And he sent me an email and he said, wow, way to help the Rubio campaign, you know, smiley face. And I understood what he was saying, but then followed it up by saying, you know, you can't control how the media is going to spin this. My argument has been in the last couple of weeks, one, he didn't win Iowa. He didn't win New Hampshire. If this really helped him, he would have been just blowing everybody else out of the water. And this year is so unique, and I don't mean to get into politics, but you know, Donald Trump is changing this whole election process, because in my mind, he's an atheist that's running as a Christian and is trying to put the Bible out there as kind of this, you know, I'm a true believer, even though I don't know that it's 2 Corinthians and not 2 Corinthians. So I think the traditional idea of the evangelical vote being so important, I think that's really being challenged this time, because a lot of those evangelical voters are siding with Trump.
Well, what is your opinion on why he would not, why Trump in particular would not answer your question? He would not answer your question.
It's very funny. I waited for 2 hours in 20 below temperatures to get inside to see Trump. I was the first one in the door. I got right up to the gate. I waited for him to get on stage. I had my atheist voter t-shirt on. When the event was all over, he worked the fence line. He got right up to me, shook my hand. I said, you know, hey, thanks for coming, blah, blah, blah. By the way, I'm going to ask you a question. And he goes, yeah, go ahead. And I get my camera phone out and I said, you know, Mr. Trump, when you become president, do you plan on strengthening or upholding the separation of church and state? He's looking down, he's signing an autograph, and he goes, uh-huh, and he nods. And I said, Mr. Trump, did you hear me? And he keeps signing the autograph, and he goes, uh-huh. I could tell he was blowing me off.
Oh, boy.
And he was, like, literally a foot from me, and I said, and I started to get a little, you know, agitated because I knew he wasn't answering my question. And I said, Mr. Trump. And right away he turns, he looks at me, he hands me the autograph picture, and he taps me on the arm, and he goes, you take care now, and literally walks away. And so my saving grace in that, or the silver lining, was that a couple days later, he went out to Liberty University and messed up the Second Corinthians line, which even as an atheist, I know how to pronounce that book. But real quick, going back to the Rubio question, the thing that I love the most is that every time a viewer sees that, that's one more viewer that gets to see how non-theistic Americans truly are. We are productive members of society. We are respectful. We are intelligent. We are informed on the issues. So when it hit 10 million views, that was 10 million more times that people got to see what an atheist looks like. You know, don't get me wrong. I talked about American Atheists a lot. They were one of the big inspirations for me. When you see David Silverman go on Fox and just rail against Bill O'Reilly, that's firebrand atheism. And there's a perfect spot for that in this discussion. And I can do that card too, but in this setting with the caucuses, I needed to be very cool, calm, collected. If you notice in the videos, I try not to argue. I try not to debate with them. I literally just want to get them on record for where they stand. Because I went into those events knowing that sometimes a non-answer is better than any answer that they could have given me.
Yeah, the evangelical cheerleaders, to use a term that came up earlier, they really kind of want to paint non-believers with this broad brush of being boogeymen. And, right. You know, in your way, you're doing a wonderful job countering that. You're a reasonable, rational person simply asking questions. And I, like you say, I think we really need that in the dialogue right now. In this culture.
Sure. So bringing that back to the question of how do I plan on continuing this, it wasn't even like a week or two after the caucus was over that here in Waterloo, our mayor announced that he was going to bring prayer back before city council meetings, something that had been stopped 12 years ago by the previous mayor who said, you know, I'm a Catholic, but we represent all people. And it's just funny thinking that now we've got this next fight locally, and how are people perceiving non-theists in this area, or atheists or humanists? Because I think you can be one and the same with those titles. But my goal is to help change the perspectives locally too. And we actually had a gentleman who describes himself as, you know, a believer, not truly a Christian, but believes that there's something else out there, actually join our efforts to tell the mayor, like, listen, it doesn't matter if you're a believer or not, having prayer as a government function is not needed. It's divisive, it doesn't help the cause anymore. So building those alliances is huge, and getting Christians and, you know, Muslims to join us and say, we're all people, we're all the same, we just have different sets of viewpoints for this life. I think that's how, one of the ways we change people's belief systems on who we are and how we operate.
Yes. Well, one thing I wanted to ask is, I'm from a state similar to Iowa. I'm from Kansas. And yesterday, our governor spoke at a religious freedom rally, which had, they estimated, about 2,000 attendees in the state house. Attending the rally, but religious freedom, the term religious freedom and religious liberty seem to have been co-opted And it really does, looking at all the comments about this story, seem to be religious freedom to discriminate. How do we address this as an issue? On a local level, on a state level, we can hardly get anyone to come to a meeting in the city that I live in, but the Catholic Church can bus loads of students to this rally at the State House.
I hear you. I mean, I totally hear you. Do you remember when Indiana Governor Mike Pence passed the religious freedom law there that essentially turned into a green light for religious folks to discriminate against people as long as they cited religious belief as their reason for doing it?
Right.
When that happened, I issued an open letter just as an average Iowa citizen, and that made some headlines. The Des Moines Register picked it up and did a story about it. But essentially, it just said, listen, if you're a business owner in Indiana or if you are a business outside of Indiana doing business in Indiana, why don't you come to Iowa? We'd love to have you. And in that, I kind of felt like the idea of religious freedom has been perverted to somehow defend a religious person's ability to discriminate, like you said. I even, when I approached Hillary Clinton, I had asked her about that. I said, how do we stand? That was the basis of my question, was how do we stand up to these lawmakers that are passing these laws that are based in, or that are religious based, that are out there simply to discriminate? And, you know, she gave a very solid answer about how that wasn't the original intent of what religious freedom was about. You know, and for those that know, back when Bill Clinton signed it, it was about the government trying to go in and take away rights of people. But it was by no way supposed to be a way to promote discrimination. And at some of the events I went to, I think I asked Jeb Bush, I said, would you allow an atheist business owner to discriminate against a Christian based on something that we believe, which is totally not even in the realm of reality, because I don't feel like we have any belief systems that discriminate against people. But
welcome back to the Humanist Hour. This week, Jen and Peggy are talking with Justin Scott.
It's so frustrating because, like you said, it starts with children. You know, when they're being indoctrinated and then they're being told that they're being persecuted if they're not allowed to, you know, stand up in front of their class and say a prayer and make everybody do it. That's where that whole persecution complex starts. And then when those Christians grow up to become activists like me, they have a totally distorted version of, or viewpoint on what that actually means. And they'll fight tooth and nail just as hard as I will, but I just feel like they go at it from the wrong point of view. And education's key. You know, we can scream at them and we can protest them and we can rally and we can do all these things, but it just doesn't get to the core of it. You know, it doesn't. I'm frustrated because I don't know the answer. I really don't know. There's so many different ways we can go at this, but...
So can secular voters find common ground with people who when they say religious freedom, it's code for discrimination? I don't know how we find common ground.
Exactly, and I don't know if that side wants to, and I'm trying my best not to demonize believers, because I have a lot of friends that are believers that are against discrimination. You know, if you go back to the debate between Bill Nye and Ken Ham, the creationist, I don't know if you remember this debate, but the moderator asked, name one thing that would change any of your deeply held beliefs in something. And Bill Nye said evidence, and Ken Ham said nothing. And if that's who we're dealing with, if that's their starting point, it doesn't matter what we try to tell them. I'm optimistic that we can change it. It's going to be a huge uphill fight. I mean, it's not going to be easy and it's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to take hundreds of thousands of millions of secularists to stand up and say, we're not taking this anymore. You know, we're not going to put up with an America where you just get to flaunt your religion and have a free pass to go on and discriminate whoever you want and then run and hide and say, oh, well, it's because my religion lets me do it. You know, I get very passionate about this. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah, I hear ya.
It's frustrating because, you know, I even have family members that are very, don't take my rights away. What are you talking about? I'm not trying to take anyone's rights away. Well, you're just out there with that atheist agenda. Oh, you mean rights for everybody? You mean treating women equally? You mean treating LGBTQ people the same? Oh, I guess that's a really bad agenda, isn't it?
Yeah, we touched on this a few episodes ago about the way privilege gets kind of co-opted. The whole idea of privilege gets co-opted and viewed as some kind of right or entitlement. And then when that privilege is threatened, then it becomes, quote, persecution.
I think it was Emerson that had the great quote about, never let me think that I'm being persecuted just because I'm being disagreed with.
Yes.
I think it's in those discussions we have to kind of, I'm name dropping here, but, you know, like Matt Dillahunty says, you know, you don't wait till the very end to cut these people off. You've got to jump in and just stop them at the first sign of nonsense.
At the first bad premise.
Exactly. Because otherwise, when you catch them at the end of a 3-minute rant, they're going to just go back and deny it or say, oh, you misunderstood it, or my favorite one, you took it out of context.
Oh, gosh.
I guess that's how I read the Bible, too, is out of context. I guess that's what led me to my atheism, right?
Right. And meanwhile, we're being told by, you know, folks like Ben Carson. I read and saw the video where you talked to him, and he's saying things like, there is no conflict between the Constitution and Judeo-Christian foundations, and there's just simply no room to argue with someone who builds that wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and when you get the theocrat-minded folks like Ted Cruz that are just as bad, because now he's in the top three on that side, we've got to stand up. We've got to get out there and be heard. And I know it's scary. And I know that it's, you know, people have their daily lives on the line. But I just want to put it out there like this. I'm a small business owner. I'm a somewhat well-known photographer in Eastern Iowa. I made a name for myself a couple of years ago with a big promotion. I usually shoot, let me rephrase that. I usually photograph high school seniors. I don't shoot them. But, you know, I put my neck on the line with this because I believe in it so much. And yeah, I know at any point there could be eggs thrown at my house. There could be people shouting and protesting me. I get all that. But you know what? When I'm 85 years old sitting in a nursing home and I can, you know, I need a nurse to wipe my butt, I want to look back on my life and say, I did something. You know, I want my kids to grow up and be like, wow, he put up with a lot of crap. But look at him. Look what he did. Look at the minds that he changed. And I don't plan on changing every single life. Or, you know, every single mind, but if I can do my part and then hopefully inspire others to do it. See, now you're getting me fired up. Now I feel like I need to be.
It's a good thing.
Like I feel like I'm giving a stump speech or something, you know?
Oh, wait.
And the Washington Post, when they interviewed me, one of the last things they asked me was something about, what's your goal for doing all this? And I said, you know, how funny would it be in a couple of election cycles to turn on TV, whatever you watch, MSNBC, CNN, and have a candidate be interviewed and have the moderator say, so do you feel like you pandered to the atheist crowd today? Or what did you do to pander to the humanist crowd today? Like, you know, what message do you want to get out to that audience today?
I mean, remaining neutral. That's pandering.
Yeah.
You know what, let me throw in something here, and Peggy, I would love your views on this as well. I think that we get typecast a lot, where non-believers, agnostics, freethinkers are, you know, the ones who speak up about separation of church and state. There's a thought that we simply want to be represented, that we simply don't want to be steamrolled. And I think it's so much more than that. I think separation of church and state is important for everyone, including believers of all flavors. And what are your thoughts on that? Why should all of us care about separation of church and state on any side of any fence?
Well, I, on a personal level, I am much more for the government remaining completely neutral, which in my opinion is remaining out of it. And when we open up forums, which often happens, like Justin said, at city council meetings to anyone, it can be extremely divisive. It can be a little nutty, and we've seen that at times. And I think remaining neutral is the key, we don't need to have nativity scenes on courthouse grounds. If we have nothing, it means the government is not promoting or discouraging any one religion. The same is true in our schools. And that leaves people the ability to believe what they want to believe and not have it imposed upon them.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better. Yeah.
It's an uphill battle. That is an uphill battle because many times, especially at the city council meetings, which we have seen over and over again, it leaves the council picking and choosing who has the appropriate belief to put up there in front of the town. And that is not acceptable.
Absolutely.
So in this one case, I'm gonna say go Satanists, because
well, and I was just gonna say, and I don't have a problem putting this out there. I am planning on having a meeting with the mayor. We flooded his office with emails of frustration and our dissent to this, but our first goal is to get him to stop. It's not to look for inclusion right away, because we just want it to end. We don't want it to start up again. And when I found out that he had no plan for how he planned on going about this, and he kind of was just doing it, in my personal opinion, and this is not fact, but in my personal opinion, we do have a huge faith community, and I do believe that helped him get elected. And so I feel as if this is a payback to them. And going back to what you just said about government or city councils being forced to pick and choose who gets to say what. Well, what happens when the first four applicants to give invocations are just different variations of Christianity? That doesn't mean that you're including everybody just because you're including every different Christian church in this town. And so that's going to be my big argument if he says, no, we're keeping it, is, okay, guess what? Now you're going to let atheists talk. You're going to let Wiccans, witches, Satanists, I don't care who, Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster better be represented. And if they want to walk in with colanders on their head, you better be ready to stand up and pray with them. And you hate to say it, but like you just kind of alluded to, it does turn into a circus, because that's the Pandora's box that they opened up. It'll be very interesting. Maybe I'll come back on the show in another couple months to tell you how that fight's going. Because I don't see him saying no. I don't see him turning his back on this. I mean, now he's already invested in it. He's already had one pastor speak already. Of course, even though he doesn't have a fully outlined application process yet and couldn't give me any documentation on what his overall plan with it was. So, frustrating.
Yeah.
We've seen, real quick here, we've seen kind of a sea change from Kennedy's era where he had to say, I will not impose my religion upon the public, to the current times where it's kind of a litmus test that you will be a Christian. But maybe with this rise of the nuns, perhaps we can see the pendulum swing again. However, I have two college-age students and a teenager, and they just don't seem to be all that interested in getting politically involved. Now, we have seen a big uprising in youth support of Bernie Sanders, but how do we get them to vote? How do we get them to get out there and use their powers?
Very good question, and that's something I'm very passionate about. Like I said, most of my business is focusing on high school seniors, so I would go out and shoot sporting events, and I would photograph different school events like graduations and things like that. And I noticed that as these kids would follow me on Twitter from my business standpoint, I could see what their Twitter handle was. And it just seemed like 7 out of every 10 kids had some kind of Bible quote or verse or something. And it made me wonder, are these going to become the next Christian activists out there? Because when you look at schools that have Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and you have, I think it's called the Good News Club in elementary schools, they're being modeled and they're being shaped and encouraged to go out and fight for their cause. So I think for me, it's you've got to appeal to what's important to them, even if it's one or two issues. Bernie talks about income inequality and all this, and Hillary talks about healthcare and education and all these things. but maybe those things don't appeal to the average 17-year-old right now. So maybe you, and I don't want to pigeonhole people, but, you know, maybe, for example, when you look at religious-based medical restrictions for contraceptives or for reproductive health, maybe you appeal to these young females and say, listen, I don't care if you believe or not, but if we don't educate you on what the religious right is trying to do with your ability to, you know, make decisions for your body and for your future, if you don't get active in this and you don't care, they're going to own every part of you. And that's what scares me. You know, I look at the work that Amanda Kniff is doing with American Atheist. She just released the Patients' Right to Know Act in Arizona. That's tremendous. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that or not.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
Oh, fabulous. Fabulous. If we can get these high school girls and even boys to understand what this means and what it entails and why it's important for them to know and give a damn. You know, because even if we can just get them to follow it on Twitter, go on Snapchat. I mean, a lot of these news outlets have Snapchat accounts now. You don't have to sit on, you don't have to go buy a newspaper and do it the way that I do it, but.
And how can people follow you on Twitter, Justin?
I have an account on Twitter, Iowa Atheist 247. I guess Iowa Atheist was already taken, so I'm Iowa Atheist 24/7. I don't have a Snapchat account for this effort yet. I'm debating on whether I want to. Otherwise, if they look up Justin Scott on YouTube, they can check out all the videos that I've done of all the candidates. I'm in the process of creating a Facebook presence as well. Otherwise, my email is iowaatheist247@gmail.com. I welcome all emails, even if you don't agree with something that I said on the show. I'd love to just start that dialogue and if I can, I'm very interested in speaking about this. I'd love to share my story around the country and hopefully inspire secular voters to get out this November and do what they can to be heard.
Awesome. Now, Justin, in closing, since we have you all fired up, and I really appreciate your passion for this set of issues, what would you say, what is your message to the closeted non-believers or skeptics or people who just aren't on the evangelical bandwagon, who feel outnumbered, who feel like they're being tamped down by those statistics that say 90% of their state is considered religious? What would you say to them? What do you want them to know and take to heart?
You are not alone. We've all been there. We've all gone through it. You know, obviously there are some out there that never grew up with religion in their life. And they are perfectly fine saying, yeah, I'm an atheist. What, you're not? But for a lot of people, it's a very difficult thing, especially in the southern states. Like all of the great speakers I've listened to in the movement, if it's not your time to come out, don't come out. If you can't get out and be active without fear of losing your job or being ridiculed, don't do it. Find people like myself and all the other activists before me that have blazed the trail and let us do it. Send us private emails. Watch how we go about it. And then let us, you know, lay the groundwork for what you can do. And you will find that there are just vibrant communities of non-believers out there across the country. There's probably some in your backyard that you don't even know exist. I mean, go to Facebook, type in atheist, and it'll start to find groups in your area. That's how I got started. It was scary coming out. It was scary putting that label on me, but now I own it. I am not ashamed of it. I am not scared of saying it. Because if anything, the best part for me is when I get somebody that comes up to me later and is like, dude, I'm an atheist too, or I'm a humanist too, you know, and like, I love what you're doing. And I'm like, why are you whispering? You know? And I'm like, be loud, be out there, because that's the only way we're going to change this. It's the only way we're going to attack these myths and these, sorry, I was going to say BS, you know, these tired stereotypes. I'm so tired of them. So hopefully that answers it. I mean, just know that you're not alone. That's the biggest thing. I think once you can reassure yourself that, like, hey, there are people out there that have my back. If I go out here, I get knocked down, there are going to be atheists and non-believers that are going to extend their hand out and say, you know what? Get your butt up. We're going to do this. So, God, now you make me want to go out and protest something.
Do it.
If you don't do it, who will?
Exactly.
That's a good point, Peggy. One that bears repeating. And Justin, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your work. And we look forward to seeing what mischief you get into next. We will keep an eye on you.
If I get one call from my jail cell, can I call you guys? I'm just kidding.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Thanks so much for having me on. This was way fun.
It was.
We promise we'll do a GoFundMe account for your bail.
Yes. Just let us know.
That's one of the things my wife would joke about when I'd head out the door. She'd say, okay, just remember, you only get one call. Thanks so much. Take care.
You too, Justin.
As always, we value your feedback on the show. Have a comment or question for today's guests? Have a suggestion for a guest you'd like us to interview? Email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. Thank you again for listening to The Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association.